Welcome to My Songs Considered here at Hawaii Public Radio. I'm your host, DJ Mr. Nick. Here we unpack the stories behind five songs that helped to shape someone and why. And today, my guest is Simon Krukel, the General Director of Hawaii Opera Theater. Simon, how are you?
Good, thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you so much for coming in.
No, it's great. Although you've given me the most difficult task ever to find only five songs from a... I've been very fortunate to spend my whole life in music, and especially in the management of music. And honing it down to five is really tricky. But thanks a lot.
I'm sorry. Thank you in advance for coming in to do this. And in England, this is your Desert Island top.
There's a show in England called Desert Island Discs. Yeah. So this is a very similar kind of concept. I've grown up with it.
Well, give me a little bit of background. How did you get into music?
So music's always been very integral to life. My father is a concert pianist and a church organist. And from the age of about three, I was dragged off to church on Sundays to sit on the organ bench to keep me out of the way at home, basically. And so I learned organ music and I learned church music from literally from the cradle. And then at about the age of five, I started singing in the choir. My two younger brothers also joined the choir. So we were a very much a singing family. And music happened at school, of course, as well. And then later in life, when I was getting ready to go to college, I applied for a choral scholarship to King's College, Cambridge University, which is a very similar thing to a football scholarship here. You get in on the scholarship, and then you get to study whatever subject you want to study. My choice was economics, actually. But I spent a lot of time in the chapel singing music.
Nice. So with that said, what's our first song?
So our first song happens to be King's College Choir, and this is a recording of the Durufle Requiem. It's a wonderful French piece for choir and organ. It sounded magnificent in King's College Chapel. And this is the track called Kyrie Eleison, part of the Requiem Mass, sung here by King's College Choir in about 1981.
And you're in this?
I'm in this, yes. If you listen very carefully, you can hear my little... brogue in the bass section.
Sounds good. Here we go.
Thank you.
is well known throughout the world for its Christmas Eve carol service. And HPR broadcasts that every year, as do many, many stations throughout the world. It's recorded live by the BBC and then transmitted everywhere. And it's a very, very special place and a very, very special experience. It's probably, because of that, one of the best-known choirs in the world. And it was a great privilege to be able to sing there for 3 years and to take part in the carol service and to take part in other services. The music director at the time, Philip Ledger, was a very important mentor of mine. And in fact, my first professional job was working for him at the Royal Scottish Academy of Music and Drama in Glasgow. He was the principal of the college, and I went up to be his assistant. And so King's and Cambridge and the choir meant a tremendous amount to me, although my degree was in economics, so I wasn't really a musician by trade. But I've always been able to combine music and economics in my career subsequently. But it was a very formative 3 years of my life, and we traveled the world performing in Japan and Australia and through Europe. And it's probably the most recorded choir in the world too. So it's great to be able to share a little part of that because it really did form the rest of my musical life and career going forward.
Perfect. So you're listening to My Songs Considered, and we're chatting here with HOT General Director Simon Crookall. What did we just hear?
So we just heard a track from Durufle's Requiem, Maurice Durufle, for organ and chorus. And this was sung every other year. In fact, on All Souls Day, we always sang a requiem. 1 year, Fauré Requiem. The next year, Durufle Requiem. The Fauré Requiem is very well known, and people sing it all over the world. Durufle, not so much, but it's a very rich and beautiful choral work. And we recorded both of those while I was at King's.
So what's next?
So, of course, I didn't know at that stage. Singing was a very important part of my life, and I've always been a singer. But I didn't realize quite how important orchestral music was going to be in my life. One of the very first recordings I was ever bought as a child, probably the age of about 10 or 11, was Sibelius's First Symphony. And it was a recording I treasured. It's absolutely glorious, evocative, symphonic music. This particular recording is by the Royal Scottish National Orchestra, conducted by Alexander Gibson. And at the age of 10, of course, I had no idea that later in life I would actually be running the Scottish National Orchestra, and that ensemble being a very important part of my life. So I thought back when I got to the orchestra in 1995, and thought about that first recording on an LP, of course, in those days, that had meant such a lot to my musical upbringing.
So it's kind of a full circle in a way.
It was really interesting that suddenly here I am running the orchestra that recorded that piece. And there was another connection, because Alexander Gibson had sadly passed away by the time I got there, but he was an incredibly important figure in Scottish musical life. He founded Scottish Opera. He was the music director of the National Orchestra for many, many years. And when we moved to Glasgow to run the orchestra, we were looking at apartments to buy, and came to this flat in the West End, beautiful part of the town, and talking to the lady who was selling it, and she asked why we were coming to Glasgow, and I said, well, I'm running the Royal Scottish National Orchestra. She said, oh, Alexander Gibson used to live in this house.
Oh, my God.
And it was kind of meant to be, you know. So we bought the house, and we lived in the house that he lived in when he was probably recording this piece that I had as a child at the age of 10.
So it's completely serendipitous.
It was extraordinary coincidence, yeah. So we had to play this one. And this is Sibelius' First Symphony, the first movement.
All right, let's take a listen. Thank you.
So the years at the Scottish National Orchestra were really rich. It's an amazing ensemble. They recorded huge amounts of music, both in the early days and during the time I was there. We did a lot of recordings for Naxos. And we also recorded several discs for a Hollywood recording company called Varis Saraband. They did re-recordings of a lot of the movie soundtracks by all kinds of composers, including Bernard Herrmann and Jerry Goldsmith, and also Elmer Bernstein. And Elmer actually came to Scotland to record several of his tracks, To Kill a Mockingbird, and, of course, the iconic Magnificent Seven, which is one that he's incredibly well known for. He's a delightful man. He was very gentle with the orchestra. He was delighted at the sounds they made. And they're a very quick recording orchestra, so no rehearsal needed. We put the music down and off they went. And then we took him to London and did some concerts with him of his own music. So this is a track from, it's the title role, actually, from Magnificent Seven. We did a lot of film soundtracks, some of them very current, some of them much older. John Barry, for example, we did a lot of his Out of Africa and those kind of films. Elmer made a significant impact on me because he's such an incredible man. And he's so delightful, so gentle, so gracious with his fame. I mean, he was one of the most Oscar-winning composers of film music at the time. And he was enjoying the latter part of his career. He was still making film soundtracks, but of course he's no longer with us, sadly. But he was a delightful man to work with, and the orchestra really blossomed under his conducting. It's not very often you get a composer to conduct his own work, and so you get the real impulse behind the music when you do that. And he was just a delightful man to work with. We did some amazing recordings. One of the most memorable was Braveheart, the soundtrack to Braveheart, which was John Horner. And the score calls for a bagpipe, of course. And we were in Scotland, so you'd think there would be plenty of bagpipes. But he has written for a specific kind of bagpipe, the Julian pipes. And we think it must have been because he had a particular player in mind in Hollywood when they recorded the original soundtrack. So the part was not playable on a normal bagpipe, on a normal Scottish bagpipe. We had to go and find somebody who could play this particular pipes. And as it happened, we found somebody, and he came to the recording session, but he couldn't read music. So we're in the middle of a recording session, and time is money, and you need to get the thing recorded by the end of the session. And it was clear that we were not going to get there with this guy. So we then went out and literally went around the pubs of Glasgow finding bagpipe players who might be able to come in and play this particular tune. And the theme tune for Braveheart is very well known. So, of course, we found this person, and I took him into a back room and taught him the music in the back, and he played it beautifully. And then it came for time to go in to play it with the orchestra. And I said, here you go, on you go, it's your on. He said, oh, aren't you coming with me? And I said, well, no. He said, no, I think you should come with me. So we went into the middle of the orchestra looking absolutely appalled at this point. What the hell is going on? Why is Simon coming in with the bagpipe player? And
this
so
is the guy you found in a pub.
The guy we found in a pub. And what I had to do is cue him to when he started playing. So the music is swirling and the tune is building, and it comes to the point where the bagpipe plays, and I prod him in the arm, and what do I hear? For about a bar and a half before he actually plays, because the bagpipe needs to fill up with air.
Oh my God.
So of course he was a bar and a half late, and the whole thing ground to a horrible halt. And so we started the thing again. This time I gave him a nod a bar and a half before he started, and everything was fine. So the resulting recording is now out and was duly accomplished. But it was quite a challenge at the time.
So when the Braveheart soundtrack was recorded, you were standing right there.
Yeah, well, for the archive recording, not for the film. No, they recorded the film in Hollywood. But we did a series of film soundtracks that then sold throughout the world later. But yes, when I was recorded, I was prodding the bagpiper in the shoulder when he was playing.
But that is not one of your top five.
But it's For obvious reasons.
But what a story.
It brings me out in a rash when I think of that story.
Gosh, okay.
Anyway, so Magnificent Seven was a much smoother experience, and Elmer was just a delight to work with.
Got it. So with that said, what's your next track?
So we did, as I said, we did a lot of recording in Scotland of varying kinds of music, and it's important with orchestras nowadays to find every possible source of income to keep the company going. One of the more unusual projects that we did was with a wonderful singer called Eddie Reader. She's a Scottish folk singer, and she used to be part of a band called Fairground Attraction, a folk band. And she wanted to record a disc of songs of Robert Burns, with combining Celtic musical instruments with the orchestral sounds. And she had this incredibly descriptive voice and very communicative way of expressing the songs. And so I've chosen one called Willie Stewart, which is a very lively Scottish tune. Scotland was my home for 20 years, and it's been a very important part of my life. And this music brings back that feeling of Scotland and the folk tradition, the incredibly rich folk tradition. Later in 2004, the new Scottish Parliament was founded, and they built a magnificent new home for the Parliament to live in. Eddie and the orchestra were invited to go and perform at the opening ceremonies for the Parliament, and this was one of the tracks that we chose for that too.
And this is, you oversaw that whole, the opening?
It was under my management.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah.
So this kind of just takes you back to that whole thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Flower, it grows, it feeds, it falls, and nature cannot renew it. But worth and truth, eternal youth, we'll give to waste you out. May she whose arms shall unfold thy charms possess a loyal and true heart. To her be given, to him a heaven, she holds and Willie Stewart. You're welcome, Willie Stewart, you're welcome, Willie Stewart. There's ne'er a flower that blooms in me that half so welcomes thou art.
Welcome, Willie Stewart,
oh, you're welcome, Willie Stewart. There's ne'er a flower that blooms in me that half so welcomes thou art.
You're listening to Hawaii Public Radio. My name is DJ Mr. Nick, and you're listening to My Songs Considered. And we're chatting with HOT General Director Simon Kripal.
Hey.
Hi.
It's good to be here.
Thank you so much again for coming in.
So it became clear that my life was heading in the direction of opera. I've worked in music colleges. I've run a concert hall. I've run two major symphony orchestras. But I really couldn't escape the fact that my heart is in singing, vocal music, and opera. And so finally I made it to Hawaii in 2013, and I'm very glad that I did, because although I'd sung in opera before, I'd directed choruses for opera before, I'd never really been part of an opera company. And being part of Hawaii Opera Theatre is the culmination of my career to date.
So HOT was your very first...
professional opera company.
Got it.
Yeah. And the first opera we performed when I got here in October of 2013 was Puccini's Turandot, a very popular opera, gorgeous score, massive production. And it happened to be one that I had sung in many, many years before in the north of Scotland. I sang the role of Ping, one of the three mandarins, Ping, Pong and Pang. And by chance, when I got here, we had... situation, it doesn't happen very often, thank goodness, but the singer who was due to be singing Ping was sick, and it happened to be a role I'd done before. So just as a joke, I went into my colleague Henry Aquina and said, oh, don't worry, if we don't find a Ping, I've sung the role before. And the look on his face was extraordinary. He was shocked. Needless to say, I didn't sing the role because I was running the company. But it was a fun thing to say.
So our new general director could literally just step in and take
I could
over
have sung that role, except that I'd sung it in English rather than in Italian, but that doesn't matter. Anyway, so the track I've picked from this opera is the very end of Act One, Calaf. The prince is totally besotted already by the princess Turandot, is determined to try and seek her hand although he knows that it's a very dangerous route through the Three Riddles to get to her. And he has seen just before one of the failed princes having his head chopped off. So it's a risk-all strategy for him. But he does it anyway, and he bangs the gong, which signals the acceptance of the challenge and the trial of the Three Riddles. And this is the very end of Act One. Magnificent. The whole company is singing. The chorus joins in. It's opera at its very grandest and very best.
Thank you so much for coming in and sharing all this music for us.
Not at all. It's been great fun sharing it all with you.
If there are a few songs you'd like to share with us, feel free to send us an email at songs@hawaiipublicradio.org. My name is DJ Mr. Nick. Thanks for listening.